This program is brought to you by Fine Diners Over 40, a members-only dinner club for singles and couples who enjoy dining at highly rated restaurants and sharing the experience with others. Learn more at FineDinersOver40.com. That's FineDinersOver40.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and we are coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, February 7th, 2018. This is the 167th episode of the series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is a celebrity chef, a restaurateur, TV personality, cookbook author, and podcaster, and that's just one person. And I will introduce him fully in a moment. First, as I do in every show, I will start out with my PR tip. Later, we will have my speedrun game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to appreciate what you have and not take things for granted. Often we get caught up in what we want and what's missing from our lives, that we can forget to appreciate what is already ours. And most of us probably already have everything we really need, if we think about it. They say you don't know what you've got until it's gone, so let's let this be a reminder. Be appreciative, as the future is unknown, but the present is real. That's my tip today. Now, I'm very thrilled to have my guest calling in today from the West Coast. It is Richard Blaze, who is perhaps best known for his win on Bravo's Top Chef All-Stars. Richard is a restaurateur, currently of Juniper and Ivy and fast casual fried chicken spot Crack Shack in San Diego. He is a James Beard-nominated cookbook author, a TV personality from hosting several Food Network shows to being a judge on Top Chef. And most recently, he released his second cookbook, So Good, and launched his own podcast called Starving for Attention. So hello, welcome, Richard.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me. I do wish that I was in studio with you. That's my biggest regret of the day, is that I'm not there eating some delicious pizza with you in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I wish you were here too, but we'll make this work. And next time you're in New York City, we'll perhaps have to have some pizza together. How about that?
I think that works. Do you see how I basically invited myself back on for another episode?
You're slick. I know. And it worked.
So, it's nice.
Well, you know, we met many years ago, and you know, following your career has been incredible. I always like to go back at the beginning of my show to my guests' backgrounds and how they got into what they're doing. So maybe you want to bring us back to you know, what interested you in cooking and how you got your start as a chef?
Wow. You know, origin stories can be sometimes really, really long and potentially redundant. So I will say that I started in fast food. I worked at a little restaurant called McDonald's.
Heard of it.
I basically, took it rung by rung and just really started grinding through our industry at almost every level, and just fell in love with the camaraderie of the restaurant and of a kitchen staff, and you know how that staff sort of becomes your family, and how you can just basically work all day and waste away, you know, all sorts of hours with that family. So it was really the camaraderie of the professional kitchen that sort of drove me to it, well before I even then fell in love with the craft and the art of it, if that makes sense.
That makes sense. And then, I mean, from Mickey D's, if we call it Mickey D's, hey, like how did,
yeah.
did you, when did you decide to go to culinary school and pursue cooking as a full-time job with and
sure. You know, it was, I forget what restaurant it was, but it was sort of one of these very expensive corporate steakhouses. And, you know, it was the first job that I had where I was, you know, cooking, you know, whole lobsters right from the tank and around ingredients that were, you know, more expensive than, you know, my weekly paycheck at the time. And there were chefs in those kitchens that had their names on their jacket, and it was the green script of the Culinary Institute of America up there in Hyde Park, New York. And, you know, I was just sort of, I admired these chefs who were working in the steakhouse. And I, at that time, didn't even know there were such things as, you know, the Harvard of culinary schools. And I just kind of fell in love with then the real, you know, the grind of it and the practice of it and putting in the 10,000 hours or 10 years of it. And I knew that for me, going to school would be a way to do that. And I, you know, it's not necessary for everyone who wants to be a professional chef, restaurateur in this industry. But for me, it was something that I really needed. I needed to sit in the library and, you know, think about carrots and read 12 books about carrots and you know, waste away many hours just studying, you know, the history of our profession. So I loved culinary school, and it was just a couple of, you know, green scripted chef jackets that got me into going to school.
Right. And then I know you've had experience working at the French Laundry, Danielle, some very high-end restaurants. Maybe talk a little bit about some mentors of yours before you decide to launch on your own and open your own restaurants.
Sure. I mean, if I have a lesson for anyone who's listening, who's like early on in their, you know, restaurant, you know, career or their profession, is to really embrace, you know, mentors more than I did myself. I mean, it's easy to look back now and say, you know, that I worked for Thomas Keller and I worked for Danielle Boulou and, you know, that they were mentors to me. But, you know, I didn't, you know, take advantage of, you know, that sort of mentorship. So, I mean, I guess those are the names that I would throw out there to say, like, they definitely inspired me. But I think to have a proper sort of mentor-protege relationship, it's got to go both ways. So I don't know if those chefs would consider me a protege, but I certainly learned from, you know, some really, really great chefs and learned a lot of different things. I think when I'm talking about those two great three Michelin star chefs, you know, it wasn't necessarily the recipes that I learned, but from a chef like Thomas Keller, it was, you know, sort of the military aspect of being organized and prepared. From Danielle Boulou, it was, you know, what true hospitality is and connecting to the guests and being not only the mayor of the kitchen, but the dining room. So I should be a politician. I don't even know if I'm answering your question, but I am.
You are.
I am talking.
No, you are. I mean, there's so much to talk about with you. I mean, maybe we'll jump a little into Top Chef, because I'm wondering in this, when you're cooking, you're working for these amazing chefs, and did you ever foresee TV in your future and becoming, I mean, you're very well known. You've now done so much TV, but the first steps into getting onto Top Chef, was that, how did that come about?
Yeah, you know, I don't think when I started, you know, cooking professionally that I had, you know, there was really no food TV. I mean, I'm dating myself a little bit, but even when I went to culinary school, I went to culinary school in like the first year of Food Network, when it was like David Rosengarten and the Two Hot Tamales, and that was it. And then it was just fade to black for the rest of the 20 hours.
Yeah, I think we're probably around the same age generation, so I can relate.
Exactly. So, you know, it wasn't that. I mean, for me, food TV was Julia Child and, you know, The Galloping Gourmet and that sort of thing. And, you know, my stepdad, my dad that I grew up with, is sort of in the television industry as an editor and produced a couple of things. And, you know, so I was kind of always around sort of the idea of film or television, but it was never something that I thought would sort of, you know, interact with cooking at all. And Top Chef just was an absolute accident. You know, someone called up and said, we're, you know, casting for this show, Top Chef, would you be interested? I had a massive ego at the time. I still have a baby ego, but I thought they were looking for a judge. I said, sure, I've never heard of this show, but I'll be interested in judging it. They were like, no, to compete. And, you know, I sort of had a couple days of like checking myself mentally, you know, because I had to put my ego in check and say, hey, I'm going to go on this show that I really wasn't familiar with and compete, and I could really embarrass myself. But I figured it would be a good test. And I'm glad I did it. It taught me a lot about myself and you know, obviously the trials and tribulations of competing in front of millions of people definitely, I think, made me a better person.
Yeah, well, you did incredible. I loved watching you on the compete. And what when they called, this is when you were in Atlanta, or did they seek you out?
Yeah, I'm in Atlanta, okay. Like a sort of a restaurant that didn't even exist for very long, but... You know, I make this story up because I think what happened was that restaurant got a review that weekend. Top Chef casting happened to be in Atlanta. I'm on the cover of the food section, you know, blasting a tomato with liquid nitrogen. Someone, you know, a casting director's having coffee somewhere at a hotel. And it's like, oh, we should probably just call this guy. That might be exciting. So began sort of me being, tied in and perhaps even pigeonholed as the molecular gastronomist. Or one of them of the Top Chef franchise.
Yeah, well, you did. There was a lot of, that's very cool. And there was a liquid nitrogen and experimental, I don't know, sort of cooking happening on TV. A lot of people hadn't seen before. It's interesting though that I think because looking at the restaurants you've worked with and from the past and your current restaurants, like Fast Casual Fried Chicken Spot, Crack Shack is. In my opinion, or any opinion, it's definitely not molecular gastronomy. So how would you define your cuisine or your style? And I guess has it evolved over the years?
Yeah, I never really identified as a molecular gastronomist. So that's whether it's a jazz musician or a rocker or someone who's in the hip hop world. I'm a hip hop kid from the '90s in New York. And, it always bothered me when they called hip-hop rap music. And I think that's similar with molecular gastronomy, it's really just the science or study of how to make food more delicious, whether that's creative cooking or modern cooking. I never was a big fan of the title. So, I mean, my food has just always been American, which, means it's globally influenced and locally sourced, and none of that's really changed. Of course, a restaurant like Crack Shack, which is fried chicken mostly and chicken sandwiches, it's easy to think that it's not a science-based sort of experience. But, behind the scenes, there's a lot of science that goes into the percentage of salinity in a chicken brine and how long that time is. It's not the exciting stuff like liquid nitrogen or spherification or foams or whatever you have it, but there's definitely a lot of modern cuisine that goes into even something as humble as a chicken sandwich or a hamburger.
Right. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's true. So, with Top Chef, then as being a competitor, and then you went back and you won the All-Stars, and then you've become a regular as a judge. I mean, how did that transition come about? Because I feel... Is that something you saw, well, I want to be on the other side, or did they reach out to you? Because, it's been interesting to see with all the seasons of Top Chef what the contestants, the people who've won or the people who not necessarily came in first place, how their careers have grown and how they've taken off. And so yours certainly took off from that experience. But, like, were you seeking to do more TV? Like, did you just find a joy in being on camera?
I definitely fell in love with, I've always been a student, I think, like, if you really start distilling or boiling down, what I'm all about, it's always about trying to learn new things and, trying to push myself into a position where, 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, I never thought I'd be. So, definitely once you go on television and you compete, you start seeing what that world looks like and you realize, okay, well, now I've competed. I think I could judge because I know what good food tastes like. And you kind of just throw that into the world. I don't know if I necessarily went out to you know, pursue judging or then hosting television shows. But it was definitely, I was obsessed with the process of making television. And really, I think there's a lot of similarity between like the restaurant industry and, you know, the television film industry, how many hours go into, you know, producing a television show versus running a restaurant, as an example, the similar sort of cultural aspect to it. You know, you don't wear a suit and tie to work, the camaraderie of it, the everyday aspect of all of these things. So I definitely fell in love with, you know, cooking on television. And I think a lot of that just came about because, you know, you go on a show like Top Chef and then all of a sudden you have people who are fans. And that's like an incredible responsibility. And to know that you can impact, you know, one person's life by cooking a steak on television, whatever it is a big responsibility. So for me, I wanted to continue that. And I'm still on that grind. I don't know if I'm successful. You said that, but I'm still trying to figure it out. And you know, now that I've hosted and judged television shows, like now my next step is I'd love to create one. And that's sort of like what 2018 is looking like for Richard Blaze. Like, hey, can I push this all the way? And, you know, could I make a television show that I'd really be proud of, not to only just be on, but, you know, to watch.
Oh, wow. Cool. That sounds exciting. I mean, you certainly have ideas and you make stuff happen. I mean, with everything you've just in the brief bio I read, there's so many titles you have, and I want to talk more about your book and also your podcast. So we're going to take a little break and then come back and talk more with Richard. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Come for the food, stay for the friends. Fine Diners Over 40 is a members-only dinner club for singles and couples who enjoy dining at highly rated restaurants and sharing the experience with others. Fine Diners Over 40 appreciate food as art, as cultural adventure, as scientific experiment, and best of all, food as an opportunity to take pleasure in the company of others. Join them for culinary and social adventures in New York and Seattle. Food may be the main attraction at Fine Diners Over 40 events, but it is the friendly and interesting members who carry the day. Join them for an evening of fine dining, fun, and stimulating conversation. While enjoying innovative tasting menus by first-rate chefs, you'll talk movies, theater, pets, sports, travel, and more. Epicurus said it best. We should look for someone to eat and drink with before looking for something to eat and drink. Learn more at finediners40.com. That's finediners40.com.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Richard Blaze. He's probably best known from Bravo's Top Chef All-Stars as the winner of that competition, and he's on TV a lot, which is pretty cool. And he has a new book that came out called So Good. So, Richard, this was your second book. What inspired you to write this one, and what's the premise behind the recipes?
So Good is... you know, basically inspired by, you know, some of the restaurant cooking that I've been doing over the last couple of years since I moved out here to the West Coast in California. But it's also the food that I'm cooking at home with my wife and kids. But the everyday sort of food. So it's a lot of classic dishes with a little bit of a spin or twist, but the type of food that you can come home and, you know, just get a couple of ingredients from the grocery store and cook, you know, within a couple of hours. That's, to me, the most important part of this book, was to have it be something that was applicable, especially because, like you mentioned earlier, a lot of people associate me with liquid nitrogen or sous vide cookery or anything like that. This is about how to make a great goulash at home. And if you happen to have duck legs laying around, you know, how to make it, you know, with duck confit instead of beef, as an example. I hope I did the book justice. I'm incredibly proud of it. It's a delicious cookbook.
Yeah, no, I think you did, and I saw your photographer you worked with, Evan Sung, who's fantastic, and he came on my show not too long ago. So it's, you know, not only great recipes, but great photography. So
Evan's a special talent, and it's one of those people, like, I'm just lucky, you know, to be on this podcast with you and to have these opportunities and to have even someone like Evan Sung, you know, interested in, you know, shooting my food. I'm a lucky boy, you know, to be in that situation. Evan is an incredible talent. And I'm a little jealous you got him on your show before he's come on my podcast. So I'll have to reach out to him tonight.
Well, I'm sure he will. Actually, I think my show was the first radio show he had done, and I was surprised he hadn't been on another Heritage radio show, because he's amazing and he's here. So I feel like, I think this is a good segue into talking about your podcast, and I think he'd be happy to come on. Tell me about how your podcast came about, because I listened. It's great. I picked out the episode you did with John and Vinny's, and it was a great listen. I decided today before my show to have a little extra caffeine, because I was thinking I had to keep up with you.
Well, you're very kind. As a podcaster now, I will have to tell you, thank you for listening to one episode, but I'd appreciate the free subscription on Apple Podcasts, and of course the 5-star rating if you could be so kind.
Well, I'll throw, you know, that right back at you. How about that? One for one.
Like for like. That's what the kids are saying. I like it.
I would like to listen to more. I just got a taste of it so far.
Of course. I mean, really, for me, I'm a big fan of audio. I'm a big fan of podcasts. A ton of shows on Heritage. And it was just a form that at the time, you know, we launched our Starving for Attention, the podcast, in, I think, late June of last year. There weren't too many, you know, food-centric podcasts that were really, you know, there are a lot of really great shows, but, you know, I think there's a lot of gravitas out there. And we wanted to do something that's a little lighter, that could possibly get some people, in our industry about things that aren't just about, like, their projects or their work and kind of just like how they like to spend Saturdays and what music they listen to. So that was the goal. And honestly, the bycatch of that was just to spend more time with my wife, Jasmine Blaze, who co-hosts most of the episodes with me, except when I'm on location sometimes. And there's really no reason. You know, we throw around the term passion project a lot, but as you probably know, you're not really doing the show to make a lot of money.
No.
or if you are, I'd like to be a part of Heritage.
I've always called this gig of mine, it's a passion project, and I get joy out of doing it. If something else comes or that would be wonderful. But I feel like we probably both got in it for the same reasons.
Exactly. I really like doing it, and there's no other reason except that I also, you know what? This is a really weird thing, though. I'm not very social. I really only become very social, you know, when I'm on the mic or when I'm in front of a camera or, you know, if I'm in the dining room of my restaurants. But it kind of forces me to be a little bit better socially and to interact with, you know, people that I really respect and admire. Believe it or not, I'm much more of an introvert, and the podcast is another way to sort of help me through some of those personal issues I have.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. It's always interesting, people who are, you know, out in the spotlight, in front of the camera, who are more introverts, because I guess maybe you wouldn't know, or you wouldn't guess it. But so I have to know, like, how do you manage your time? You have a lot going on.
Yeah, I mean, the honest answer is, you know, barely, or just, or I don't know. I think last week was the first time I've ever in my career double booked something. I was supposed to be on a television show in New York and a television show in San Francisco, and I totally didn't communicate with my team, and, you know, that was a little embarrassing. I'm in a moment where I'm just trying to embrace all of these amazing opportunities and, you know, do as much as I can because I just love doing it. You know, like I love being on this show with you right now. I'm sitting in the parking lot in my car.
Wow.
Close to Mesa, California. Yeah, in front of one of my restaurants that's in Orange County. I just drove back from doing a radio show at the Santa Monica Farmers Market in L.A. I just love it. Like, I'm just lucky. And I think once you start, you know, like you mentioned in your open, how you should just be really grateful of what you have. And I think that's not just a great lesson for today. I think that's just a great lesson in all of our journeys. So I'm just trying to do as much as I can because I love it.
Yeah, no, thank you. And I'm so grateful to have you on my show. Managing time, I was thinking you need to clone yourself, but yeah.
It's hard. The fact of the matter is it becomes really hard, you know, for my family, right? Because, you know, we're doing all of this, to get to some place where we don't have to work as hard, perhaps. And, my business partners and my actual family, you know, it is tough because you're scrambling around and I'm in different cities all of the time. But, you know, again, the long-term goal is to get to a point where maybe we could work a little less.
Right. Yeah, so we're going to take another break, but before we do, I have a question from my guest on my last episode. On episode 166, I had on Jim Leahy. He is the owner of Sullivan Street Bakery and co-restaurant. And he wants to know, were you born with that?
He's a hero, by the way. He's a hero.
He is a hero. I didn't give him enough of a shout out. He's actually, I'm working with him as a full disclosure. He's one of my clients now, and I love him. He's fabulous. So he wants to know, though, were you born with that Tintin style haircut, or is this something you picked up along the way?
You know, I dated myself earlier, so we all remember, you know, Bart Simpson, when Bart Simpson first, you know, came mm-hmm. on the scene. And I think my haircut is a little bit Bart Simpson inspired, and then I've carved it up and chopped it up over the years in different ways. But if I had to go back and say, when did it happen? Probably around the time that Bart Simpson started to happen.
Okay. Good to know. I was wondering if it was with being on TV. I don't know if, I mean, I have not been a reality, you know, TV contestant, but I always wonder if people go into the shows thinking they need to have a signature style or something that's going to make them stand out, you know, so maybe.
Yeah, that's an honest and fair question. I think that it helps, you know, but yeah. I don't, like, for me, it was never calculated. It was just, I'm a weird looking dude with a weird haircut that likes to wear, you know, different style sneakers or shoes. And it just kind of is part of my personality. I think if you start to try and create that, you know, it never really works out in any sort of art form. But, you know, you can tell Jim that I'm more of the no need hairstyle now. It just kind of does its own. It's been doing it for so long. I don't have to overwork the dough, if you know what I mean. It just kind of does its own thing.
That is perfect. Okay, we're going to take another break here, and we're going to come back, and we're going to play my speed round game and talk some industry news. Stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Richard Blaze. It's time for my speed round game. So, Richard, what this is I name a couple things and you pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla. Are you ready?
Chocolate.
Done. Okay. I love it.
I answered the sample question. Sorry.
No, that's good. That's good. Because now I know you're really ready.
Yes. Do I get points for answering faster?
Yes.
Okay, great.
We'll see if you get stuck. You're fast. I don't know. We'll see. Let's see how you do. Okay, here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Oh, this is going to be eat in because I told you I'm an introvert, so I'm all about that room service when I'm traveling and or cooking my own meal. So eat in, which is weird for a restaurateur to probably say.
Actually, there's been a few chefs and people. Yeah, eat in is probably more popular than I would have thought. I'm an eat out, but I'm not playing the game. So, but
yeah, but
there
you
have one.
You're a social influencer. You have to be out and about. You know, that's your job.
Okay, cool. Then I guess it's the right fit for me. Okay, how about wine, beer, cocktail, or mocktail?
Oh, I'm gonna say mocktail. So I really. Unless I'm tasting, I don't really drink alcohol unless I'm literally sort of tasting or working on a project that, you know, involves a recipe. So I'm a mocktail guy, but I'm a masculine mocktail guy, which means like I like sort of like, you know, deeper, dark flavors. And I love bubbles. I'm giving you big answers here. I love carbonation, but I'm a mocktail with carbonation and maybe a splash of bitters.
Fabulous. How about tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte, which is probably going to be controversial for me, but I have long ago, stopped, you know, really sort of focusing on long tasting menus. And this is from someone who at one point had a 31 course, you know, tasting menu on one of his restaurants. A la carte. I like to choose what I'm going to eat. I think it's easier for the guest. And, you know, who's got 4 hours to sit at dinner, maybe once or twice a year? A la carte.
Yeah, I'm thinking you certainly don't have 4 hours. How about small plates or large plates?
Ooh, that's a real tough one because I almost want to say I would do either. It depends how I'm feeling. At the moment, I'm pretty hungry because I'm trying to get lean. So I'm going to say larger plates. There's just still something that's amazing about a 40-ounce dry-aged ribeye. And you know, that sometimes is a little bit more exciting than half of a scallop on a plate.
Okay. How about communal table or chef's counter?
Ooh, neither because I have to answer. I'm an introvert. Like I don't want to have to interact with the kitchen because that's a little awkward sometimes. And I don't really want to say hi to someone I've never met before at a table. So I'm more of a corner table in the room sort of guy.
Okie dokie.
Neither. Obviously, I'd be a horrible date. So I'm, you know.
Hey, you're allowed to have your corner table with your wife in the corner and not talk to anyone. And if
okay,
that's,
like I prefer is I like to eat out back, right? Like that's the way you got to do it.
Okay, I don't know. We're about halfway. How about tipping, tipping or all inclusive charge?
Oh yeah, I kind of a throwback. I like the all inclusive charges, and then you add on a little tip. How about that?
that's excellent. Competing on reality TV or judging?
Oh, easy judging, right? I mean, it's a little easier to just eat delicious food or not and talk about it than it is to sort of compete and put your heart and soul out there.
Yeah, I imagine. Okay, a few more. Writing books or hosting podcasts?
Oh, well, I would love to sell a book this year. So I want to say writing books, but the truth is hosting podcasts. So it's a little easier. It's a little bit more organic, perhaps.
Okay. Cheese plate or dessert?
Man, as much as like I'd love to say cheese plate, I'm going to have to say dessert. I mean, I like dessert, and really, like, that's a proper, you know, restaurant meal. It's going to be dessert.
Okay. Last one, Manhattan, Brooklyn, or San Diego, or Atlanta, or any city you've lived and worked in,
Let's be honest. Let's be honest. You know, all of those are really, really cool places. Wow. Yeah, I got to answer one of those. This is like...
I'm not trying to torture you.
As a Long Islander, Queens isn't in the mix.
I'm selfishly doing where I live and where Heritage Radio studios are. So,
listen, I'm gonna jump on the bandwagon. There's just always something incredibly cool about saying Brooklyn. I'm going to say Brooklyn. You're in Brooklyn right now.
Yes.
I'm just a New Yorker, but we're all a little Brooklyn, aren't we?
I think so. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's the game. It was very interesting hearing your reasoning behind things, which is, you know.
Yeah, I know. Usually that wasn't part of the game, but I threw that in. I made my answers a little shorter as we were going because I got the sense you were like, wow, he's kind of taking this to be a 5-minute segment per question.
No, it's all good. Everyone plays it a little different. Some people are just straight to the answer, and some people give explanations for things. And I love hearing the explanations. But yeah, it does eat up time a little bit. So
no worries.
But it's good. No, I really did enjoy hearing your reasonings. So for industry news, I think this is a fun article to talk to you about. So the one I picked out on Grub Street, the title is "Thank You, Salt Bae. The viral sensation arrives in New York and sprinkles some digital fairy dust on our critics' Instagram feed," by Adam Platt. So anyone who's living in New York in the restaurant industry now has probably seen all of the press that's come out on this restaurant. It's called Nusser et Steakhouse, and it's from this phenomenon. Salt Bae is his name, the chef, and he became super famous on social media, mostly from doing his, like, I don't know, he puts up his arm, he kind of does a little salt throw on the steak, and it's like the reason to go to the restaurant, apparently. And all of the critics have gone in this week to just talk about it. Pete Wells went in from New York Times. Kate Crater's been in. Steve Cuozzo. So what do you take of all this as someone who's a chef and restaurateur?
First of all, I am wearing right now a deep V-neck T-shirt and sunglasses. And
black.
Like, there's... Yeah, Salt Bae has obviously influenced me to many degrees. Listen, I think he's amazing, to be honest. I mean, let's not forget that, you know, he's a restaurateur, I believe, started in Turkey, right? And has places, mm-hmm. I think, in Dubai, and I think he's an outstanding butcher. For anyone who's hating on Salt Bae, also just try to do the Salt Bae salt sprinkle. It's an incredibly difficult position to get your arm into. I say that as someone who's obviously tried to salt blaze a few times. I'm all in. He's sort of the pit bull of the culinary world right now. I think it's amazing that he's getting all this attention. You kind of knew, you know, when he came to Miami first, I thought that was a really, really good choice. And you knew when he got to New York, of course, some people were going to chew him up a little bit. But I go get yours. You know, I think that the world right now, everyone is an individual brand. Everyone has the opportunity with the devices that they have in their hands to really make themselves a success personally. And I'm all about it. I think it's pretty amazing. I haven't eaten the food yet, but I definitely am going to get there next time I'm up in New York or in Miami, because I think it's pretty special. For people who hate on Salt Bae, I have an issue with those people.
Yeah, no, I mean, my friend, the designer Glenn Coben, did the design in the restaurant, and he was telling me about they did the Miami one too, and how it's impossible to get in. It's so popular, and I mean, I think this article was interesting because Adam Platt, I don't think he went in to be like to hate on it, but he posted a picture of a bartender who had this martini cocktail balancing on his arm. And apparently he posted it on Instagram and it got thousands of likes. And then it was like reposted on New York Magazine's Instagram. And I looked at the number on New York Magazine, got 57,000 likes from this picture. So it's incredible. And I'm curious to go in and check it out. I mean, it's in the old China Grill space in Midtown. And it's been like the big opening restaurant news here. So a lot of press, you know, as a publicist looking in, like this guy's killing it. So.
Yeah. And I think, like, listen, if you've been watching, you know, his page for a while, like a lot of us have. I think it would be something if it was just, if you tried to launch it, going back to the, do you get on reality TV and do you, you know, create the haircut? You know, like I think Salt Bae was Salt Bae well before he had millions of followers on Instagram. And that's what makes it authentic. Guy Fieri's authentic. Salt Bae's authentic. And that's what makes these personalities and or their businesses or brands pop.
Right. Well said.
Plus, have you ever, if you do follow Salt Bae, he's also like, watch his Instagram stories and watch him do yoga or pull-ups in the morning. I mean, the guy is incredibly fit. I'm more fascinated with how fit he is than how he seasons his steak.
Yeah. No, I'm not. I'm currently not following him. I guess I will add to his follower as a follower and check it out. He's like a ninja in the kitchen or in the dining room, it seems. And now he's wearing black gloves because the health department sort of was on him that, you know, he's got these black, like, you know, he had to wear gloves, but he has like now the coolest gloves ever.
Of course he does.
It's part of his outfit.
That makes sense. That makes sense. It's got to be tough. One of the things with a brand like that is eventually, you know, you run out of content, right? So, I mean, I think that that's going to be the real challenge is, you know, at what point does it get old, you know, seeing him, you know, stab a filet mignon that was thrown to him in the butcher shop or, you know, salt a steak or drizzle hot butter over a sliced T-bone. The content creation is something that eventually has to get exhausting, I would think.
And I'm also thinking he has like a dozen locations around the world. Like he obviously cannot be at his restaurant all the time, going around to every table doing the salt sprinkles. So I think that's
but here's something that was brought to my attention. Do you just hire a couple of lookalikes? I'm being serious here. Do you?
I don't know. I joked before about you cloning yourself. So you think he has clones?
Right, but I don't need it. He needs it. He could, you know, listen, you get a tight ponytail and some glasses and a fit person in a deep white V-neck t-shirt. And, you know, you could weekend at Bernie's it here with Salt Bae, I think. And,
okay.
I don't know if I'd hold it against him.
Okay. Well, we'll see if that happens. And on that note, we're going to take one more quick break and then we're going to come back. I'm going to do my solo dining experience and we'll have the final question. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer, and it's time for my solo dining experience. So this week, it's at Ms. Non. Here's the rundown. The location, 435 West 15th Street in Chelsea Market, New York City. The concept, a global chain known for its Mediterranean-stuffed pitas with local twist. The chef, Israeli celebrity chef Eyal Shani. Why did I go? Well, because I like pita and I like new hot openings, and this was one happening in New York City. My experience. So on Monday this week, I went for a late lunch. I arrived around 2:15. It was a good time to go because it was after the lunch crunch, and I only had to wait probably about 5 minutes in line to order, and then my food came out less than 10 minutes later. I was sitting at the counter. There's some counter seating as well as some, I guess, like stadium seating around the space. So what did I get? I had the ribeye minute steak pita with tahini, tomato burger, and pickles, and the original world-famous baby cauliflower, and that is what it's called on the menu. So my take. Okay, now let's talk about this cauliflower. It was probably one of the best heads of cauliflower I've ever had, and I looked the chef makes it, and it said he boils it in salt water and then massages it with olive oil, and it's roasted, and it comes out super tender that you can pull it apart, or I had a fork and just, you didn't need a knife, you could just eat it right out, you know, eat the cauliflower with the fork, and it was delicious. It kind of fell apart, and the chef also claims to be the first person to do this type of dish. I don't, you know, doing the cauliflower, which has become extremely popular in restaurants, I'd say, in the past year. I see it all the time on menus. So it was awesome. I'd say it's a must order. And then the steak pita I liked. The steak was a little cold, and I don't know. For myself personally, I would have liked it to be more warmed up, but it was very tasty. The pita was great. It was fresh and fluffy, and it was a really good meal. So as I said, the ambiance, it's casual. It's in the middle of Chelsea Market, and there's counter seats and also some tables in the stadium seating. And they were playing a lively Israeli soundtrack, and so it had good energy. I'd say it's perfect for a fairly quick bite, solo or with friends. Interesting tidbit. Chef Shani is self-taught. His career started in Jerusalem in 1989, and Mizanon's are now all around the world. They first opened in 2011 in Tel Aviv, but he's also in Paris, Vienna, Melbourne, and now in New York City. So personal fun fact, I was thinking back to when I was in Israel in 1990, and I remember having pita there. I'm due for a trip, but also I was with pita. There's another awesome place in Chelsea Market from Michael Solomonoff at Dizengoff, and which is also Mediterranean Israeli food. So Chelsea Market is definitely your place to go for some amazing pita, I would say. Good options. So the cost of my meal at Mizanon was $21.50. That's not including tax or gratuity. Would I go back? Yes. And the website's MizanonNYC.com. Have you heard of this place, Richard?
I have not heard of it, but I'm going to take your recommendation and head there. I'm in that part of town frequently, and I just love that, you know, there's something, you know, we're saying massaged cauliflower. I just think that's worth the trip just to see that on a menu.
It was really good, and it lived up to its name. So, yeah. You could check it out. I love it.
You're right. Hot trend alert. The whole roasted cauliflower. Definitely a big trend right now.
Yeah, it's so interesting how that stuff happens. Like, I don't know, 5 years ago, I don't think I saw it anywhere. Now it's everywhere. So, okay, it's time for the final question. My next guests are Jonathan Rubinstein. He's the founder and president of Joe Coffee, and his sister, Gabrielle Rubinstein Cheong. She is the vice president and director of catering and customer relations at Joe Coffee. And Joe Coffee is a family-owned coffee roasting company with locations in Manhattan, and they're also in Philly now. So, Richard, can you ask a question for Jonathan and Gabrielle?
What is the question? I'm sorry.
Well, you can. No, I would like you to ask a question for them. So they're the brother-sister team behind Joe Coffee in New York. I don't know if you're familiar. Joe Coffee's, there's like a dozen locations. You've probably been to one.
Of course, yeah. I have a question. It's going to be a little selfish and self-serving perhaps. But, you know, with multiple locations, what is their biggest challenge when it comes to growth? At what point do you say we're going to go from one or two shops to a dozen? And what are some of the biggest challenges they see with a company's growth?
Great question. I will find out. Yeah, I'd like to know. So, stay tuned, and we'll see what they had to say. So that's the show, and thank you so much for joining me. I'm in awe of your career and everything you've done, and glad that I know you and wish you much continued success.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for having me on. I'll come back anytime. And I'm also, besides the fact that we had an awesome time together, I've been sitting in my car with the windows up here for an hour. So I think I've lost at least 2 pounds during the podcast up here. So
wow.
Anytime you want to do that, that's always good for my personal mental and health here.
Well, go get some fresh air, California air. I mean, it's kind of, the weather has to be better out there today than it is in New York. It's like raining, snowing, slushy, cold today. So,
listen, there's a palm tree in front of me. It's 76 degrees and breezy.
Yeah, I figured you were going to say something like that. So, but get out of the car, get some air, and thank you. Thank you for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Can't wait to come back on. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So my guest today has been Richard Blaise. He is a celebrity chef who's best known from Bravo's Top Chef All-Stars, which he won. And you can find him, his website's richardblaise.net, and on social media at Richard Blaise. You can find me on social media at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. My website's BayerPublicRelations.com and SherryBayer.com. As a reminder, all of our shows are archived at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are also on iTunes and Stitcher. And I would also like to, you know, remind everyone that you can leave us a review. It can just be a star rating or your comments. I would love to hear what you think of the show. Thanks again to Richard. Thanks to his publicist, Meredith, for helping set things up. And thanks always to my engineer, Vitor. I'm Sherry Bayer. Now, I'm going traveling a little bit for the next 2 weeks. So there's a little break on my show. We'll be playing back some of the archived episodes for the next 2 weeks. But my next live show will be Wednesday, February 28th, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as usual. I hope you'll tune in then. And meanwhile, check the archives. And I hope you'll be well. And look forward to seeing you or connecting with you, I should say, in 2 weeks. Thanks for being part of All in the Industry. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.